The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside of the Beltway. Glad that you are with me in my studio this morning. The story yesterday, of course, the Delta variant. First of all, it crushed the Dow. Delta variant fears, according to the Washington Post, send Dow tumbling more than 700 points in the worst one-day decline of 2021. The Delta variant, according to Taylor Telford and Hamza Shaban in the Washington Post, is now the dominant strain worldwide, surging rapidly, even in countries with high vaccination rates. New coronavirus infections in the United States rose nearly 70% in a single week. And nearly every state has reported increases in cases. Japan declared a state of emergency in Tokyo during the Summer Games, which kick off Friday. And they have banned spectators, but there have been several positive tests in the Olympic Village and in an alternative site for U.S. women gymnastics. Many market watchers are fearful the uptick will lead to a resumption in travel and business restrictions. Global markets as well, according to the Financial Times, were shaken, falling between 1 and 1.6% abroad. Oil prices, according to the Financial Times, fell as the Delta variant clouded the outlook for the recovery. The Wall Street Journal went deeper into the pummeling of all the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, and the Dow Industrials. The 10-year bond, though, is the real story. It fell to 1.181%. Never seen it in my life. I've asked Andrew Del Rey to join me at the bottom of the hour. He's a sponsor of the show, but he knows interest rates and housing. Conversely, the housing market is on fire like most of Southern Oregon and Northern California. I just tweeted out, by the way, a terrific tool from the New York Times, a map, an interactive map of the fire season in the West that will show you every fire, how many days it's been burning and how fast it's growing. But that is a big story. Joe, meanwhile, the president gave a press conference meant to reassure people yesterday that inflation wasn't a problem. Not a problem at all. Joe said this, cut number 7.
There's nobody suggesting there's unchecked inflation on the way. No serious economist. That's totally different. I mean, look, the stock market is higher than it has been in all of history, even when it's down this month. Even down this month. Now, I don't look at the stock market as a means by which to judge the economy like my predecessor did. But he'd be talking to you every day for the last 5 months about how the stock market's so high, higher than any time in history, still higher than any time in history. So that's not how I judge whether or not we have economic growth.
So note that the president just talked about the stock market for a minute and then said that's not what he does. It's what his predecessor did. Of course, you talk about the stock market. It's one factor among many. But his idea that no serious person says inflation, he qualified it by saying unchecked inflation. Well, inflation is always checked. There's always an upper limit. What we're talking about is wealth destroying, income ravaging inflation. And that's definitely here. Meanwhile, Joe was taking a victory lap on the economy, even as it says, huh, what's going on with the Delta variant? Cut 19.
For all those predictions of doom and gloom 6 months in, here's where we stand. Record growth, record job creation, workers getting hard-earned breaks. Look, we brought this economy back from the brink.
Teddy bear picnic music because the straw men are coming out. For all those predictions of doom and gloom, there weren't any predictions of doom and gloom. Everybody predicted that this was going to have a 5 to 7 to 8% GDP growth this year because of the amount of money spent last year. So when the teddy bear picnic convenes full of Democrats talking about all those predictions of doom and gloom, understand it's just them talking to each other on MSNBC and CNN. Because everybody knew we were going to have a boom when you spend $1 trillion. And everyone knew we were going to have inflation. And we're going to have a lot more inflation because of the extra trillion that President Biden spent. And if they add $3.5 trillion more, well, say goodbye to this economy. The COVID wave is not a United States story primarily. the Delta variant is crushing the developing world. And that's why the stock market fell in addition, because the American market can't carry the world on itself. The American economy is big and broad-shouldered, and Chicago is everywhere now. But there's a story in the Wall Street Journal on South Africa, which is just crushed by the variant, and it's leading to revolutionary change. Vaccine passports are going to become a way of life in Great Britain, as Boris Johnson announced Freedom Day yesterday from self-isolation because he's been exposed again. He doesn't want to get it again. He realizes, like, he does not want to be a breakout case, and so he's gone into isolation. Having gone to the brink of death himself, he doesn't want to do that. Indiana University yesterday got the green light from a federal judge saying it can require COVID-19 vaccines. And by the way, any arm of the government can indeed require COVID vaccines for those who use its benefits or who are in its employ. I personally believe the military ought to have done this a long time ago, and the National Guard, it's a national security issue. Ted Newland, the great water polo coach at UCI Irvine, used to scream at his players to get the flu shot in the offseason, saying, if we're in the finals and you get the flu, he'd say it very colorfully because he had a language like a sailor, you will never be in my presence again. And it seems to me that if you're a warfighting unit and you have to be war ready, you can't risk getting the Delta variant. You need to be vaccinated. And sorry, you joined the military. You don't have any rights. But I would extend that to government employees. And yes, admittees to Indiana University, if I'm a college and I make that choice and it's up to them, some don't want to do that, that's fine. But if they do it, they can. Any private business can do it. Doesn't violate your rights as an employee. The only thing that can happen is that the government can't make you do it. There would be some legislation possible. It would then be subject to constitutional stress tests, depending on the exemptions that it allowed and whether or not it was uniformly applied. We would take a look at it at that point. But you certainly could have the military do it, and the military should. GOP House Leader Kevin McCarthy named his five GOP picks for the January 6th committee. The ranking member is a fine choice. You have heard Congressman Jim Banks on this show many times. Set aside the fact he's from Indiana, he's brilliant. He's calm. He's thorough. He will have a great staff. He will lead a great committee. He will be this committee's Dick Cheney. If you remember, Dick Cheney is the whip in the House of Representatives during Iran-Contra, was a young man and was the ranking minority member of the Iran-Contra. That's the Ollie North Committee. Did a bang-up job with then private practice lawyer Dick Leon, who went on to become a federal judge. He needs a fine minority counsel, and let the minority counsel do their work. Jim Banks, stay in control of the committee, and you'll be fine. Pentagon has agreed to house Afghan interpreters at a Virginia military base. Hoorah, this is great. About 2,500 Afghans are coming in the first wave, and that is great. We've got to get them out of there. An additional 4,000 interpreters and family members are in line and will be brought out. They have a mark of death on them if the Taliban takes over the city in which they are residing, so that's good. Big story on film and TV studios offering incentives from states after pandemic shutdowns. Mega productions from WarnerMedia, Apple, Netflix have been filming in Oklahoma, Montana, Oregon, and Kentucky. It's great to have the film business back. States should compete for that business. It's good business. iPhone security, no match for the NSO spyware. The NSO spyware easily penetrated iPhones. And if you've got an iPhone, you've been hacked. All right? It's just that simple. You've got to assume it. There's a new government in Haiti, thank goodness. Every major power in the world got together and told the Claude Joseph, who was hanging on as prime minister, you're not the prime minister anymore. Ariel Henry is a neurosurgeon. He's taking over. It's still a terrible situation there, but some order is beginning to emerge. In the non-news department, Prince Harry is going to write a memoir, and that's all I'll say about that. And definitely non-news, Ben and Jerry's is not going to sell ice cream in Samaria and Judea. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, joined by David Drucker, the Washington Examiner. David, there is a play by Chuck Schumer coming tomorrow. He's going to force a vote on reconciliation. Politico reported last night that it will fail. Is he going to go through with this?
Really hard to say, Hugh. I mean, I get the sense, it's just my sense, that he's probably going to go through with this and force the vote because I think he wants to move this along and one way or the other have some work product to show. I think there's a lot of pressure on in the Democratic base not to do too much negotiating with Republicans, if any. And this whole thing has sort of become a mess, in part because the president undermined the bipartisan infrastructure deal the minute it was reached. And in part now because you don't have legislation that's finalized. You don't have legislative language, and Republicans are really wary about voting for a shell bill. Now, it should be noted, majorities of both parties routinely do this sort of thing when they want to force the issue, move things along. You can substitute things out, but it just makes it very sticky. And if Schumer decides to sort of slow things down or exhibit some more patience, this can bleed into August. Then there's pressure to, you know, sort of not necessarily cancel, but shrink the August recess, which I always think is a bad idea. All that happens when politicians get stuck in Washington in August is they get cranky and their positions harden. But
you know there is no way the Republicans are going to vote for a shell bill on the infrastructure. They could do that on criminal justice reform and work out sentencing guidelines and stuff like that. This is $1 trillion of spending. They're not going to vote for a shell bill. This thing is not going to pass.
Look, I don't necessarily disagree with you. Remember, you can vote for a shell bill to get into the bill to debate it and just refuse to vote for it to get out of debate, which is also a 60-vote threshold. So there's all sorts of ways to couch this, but they are very wary of opening debate on a bill of which they're not quite sure what the language is.
Now, it gives away the political high ground, which is Schumer wouldn't negotiate, so we didn't move forward. On the reconciliation, the $3.5 trillion in the middle of an inflation scare, do they have 50 Democratic votes in the Senate?
Well, they don't have 50 votes yet. I just tend to think they're going to end up getting 50 votes. Remember, look, I don't think most Democrats see philosophically really have ever or now see too much spending as a problem. They will look at any myriad of factors as the reason why there's either economic trouble or inflation or anything like that. I mean, it's just, you know, look, Republicans believe in, you know, tend to believe in tax cuts and Democrats tend to believe in spending. That's just the way it goes.
I just think Raphael Warnock, Maggie Hassan, and Mark Kelly are signing their political death warrants if they pass for $3.5 trillion. I just do. I think that will be the only issue.
Well, that could be, but it's far out. I don't know if those pressures are acute yet. And look, I think Democrats look at the agenda that the president is pushing, and on its own, the agenda, infrastructure spending, things like that, tends to poll well. And so they're getting the hard sell from Democrats in their own party on that front. And so I think for them, it's not an easy choice.
Voting starts in 15 months in their election. And they're going to vote for $3.5 trillion of spending with 5.5% inflation last month. I think they're barbecued if Maggie Hassan votes for that. I really do. You know, if you're an incumbent, you can wait for the transient inflation. But transient inflation covers 15 months.
Well, look, that could be true. But I think that, you know, you also don't want to show up. Look at it from their perspective. You don't want to show up to the voting party empty handed, right? So I think, you know, the pressure points for them are, on the one hand, inflation is rising. If we spend a lot more money, the economy could overheat, and I'm going to have to answer for higher gas prices. On the other hand, we're still coming out of the pandemic, and infrastructure is popular. And if, you know, I'm a part of the $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill, and I can show up and show you how all your roads and bridges are being repaired.
Yeah, let's talk about Arizona and New Hampshire, though, David. Arizona just passed a flat tax. New Hampshire is Mr. Anti-Tax, Mrs. Anti-Tax state. And Georgia is a red state that got Raphael Warnock in because of a crazy set of circumstances. It's nuts for them to be forced to vote for this.
Well, yes and no, Hugh. I think, look, Georgia's not red, it's purple. And Warnock is a dynamic politician. Arizona, they really love Ducey, but they also voted for Biden. And New Hampshire is also a mixed bag. Republicans did extremely well there, but the sitting president, you know, won by a large margin. And so I think these politicians are going to look at it from that perspective, and it's not necessarily what the choice for them to make is not necessarily obvious. They may just go with what they believe, which is, I believe in this amount of spending to do these things.
I honestly, if you polled 10 out of 10 political consultants, they would name those three states as the most vulnerable states in the first off-year election of a new presidency. And with inflation where it is, I think this is actually a Waterloo vote, David. Are you covering it as such?
It's too early for me to call it that. I'm not there yet.
All right, David M. Drucker on Twitter. Always a pleasure, David. Don't go anywhere, America. Hour number two of today's Hugh Hewitt Show. Straight ahead. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. It's Tuesday. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, joined by Byron York of the Washington Examiner and Fox News. Good morning, Byron.
Good morning, Hugh.
I have a question for you. We are 6 months into the Joe Biden presidency, and the president has spent $1 trillion the country didn't have and unleashed the Biden inflation. COVID is surging. Where are the 6 months out stories? Where are these, 6 months in and here we are? Because there just isn't anything to write about.
Well, if you look at the job approval numbers of the president, which are overall are good, it's almost all based on his handling of the pandemic, of coronavirus. And people so far are happy with that. Now, we don't know how that will be affected by all of this talk about variant, people who aren't vaccinated and all of that stuff, and perhaps some sort of compulsory policies that may follow that may make a lot of people more unhappy. But most of his approval rating is based on his handling of COVID. And so the question is, in a post-COVID world, where does his approval rating go? And also, passing his big legislative accomplishment, this $2 trillion spending bill, which was a lot more than a COVID bill, as we discussed, was sold and marketed as a COVID relief bill. So, all of his success right now, the whole thing is based on dealing with COVID, which was, of course, an enormously important issue, by far the most important issue when the election occurred last November.
But it is not dealt with. I've got a column coming out in the Washington Post. I believe that the military ought to mandate vaccinations and government employees ought to mandate vaccinations. And I don't mind that Indiana University is going to mandate vaccinations. You can't mandate people get them. But the Delta variant's a second wave, and Joe Biden has not successfully credentialed new spokespeople who are persuasive. And there are very low vaccination rates in the rural right and the urban left. It's equally a problem in some demographic. They don't want to get vaccinated. That's Biden failure. But the Biden inflation is real, and they want to spend another $3.5 to $4 trillion, and the infrastructure bill's not getting done. It doesn't look good if you're a Democrat,
yeah.
Byron York.
I listened to your discussion with David, and I agreed with all of that. But I think that maybe you didn't put enough emphasis on the irrational, emotional factors driving Democrats. For whatever reason, they came out of the Trump years with an incredible sense of grievance. They believed, of course, that the Russians had handed the presidency to Trump over the rightful winner, Hillary Clinton, and it just went downhill from there. Then they spent 4 years trying to bring him down, and they just couldn't, and they hit him harder, and he didn't go down. They hit him even harder, and he didn't go down. He left, in just a terrible, terrible way. But they now have taken over with this sort of pent-up demand for enormous government programs, and adding to their frustration. Here again, it's a story of just frustration and grievance. Adding to their frustration is they don't control a majority of seats in the U.S. Senate. It's 50-50, and they can only pass things by mustering all 50 of their Democrats and getting the Vice President, Kamala Harris, to break a tie. You can't be FDR. You can't be LBJ with a 50-50 Senate, and yet they desperately, desperately want to do this. So I think that what you're seeing on Capitol Hill with some of this crazy stuff that Schumer is doing. Schumer, this Wednesday thing, a cloture vote on the big spending bill, is like something you would do if you had 56 or 58 seats in the Senate. But he's got 50.
Yeah. In fact, they branded themselves as FDR without FDR's
exactly.
Majorities. filibuster-proof majorities. They branded themselves as FDR, and they ain't going to be FDR. Now, I have a question for you, Byron. The other thing about Democrats that they won't admit, I made one trip to the White House after the election, and I was asked by some very senior people, what do you think happened? And I said, the president lost, and he lost because of polling. And I pointed to the ABC Washington Post poll that showed him 17 points down in Wisconsin, which he lost by a handful of votes. I believe polling distorted everything in the country, that it ruined his election bid. They did not have good strategy. They had their own bad polling. I am now proven right that polling was historically bad. You wrote about this for the Examiner. I want you to expand on it, because they'll never admit this. They won because of bad polling.
This was an astonishing story. First of all, if you remember during the race, it felt like the polls were wrong. There was something wrong with him. The race felt tighter than the polls indicate. I'm not saying like the race said Trump was going to win. I'm saying it felt tighter than the polls indicated. And so what we've had now is a study, a report by the American Association for Public Opinion Research, a bunch of political scientist types who've looked at the polling, and they looked at more than 1,000 and concluded that the national election polls overstated Joe Biden's lead over Trump by 3.9 percentage points. That's big. The state level polls of the presidential race were even worse, overstated Biden's lead by 4.3 points. And the statewide races polls, that is for senators and governors, were still worse. They were overstating the Democratic lead by 6 percentage points. Now, you just heard something. All the errors went in one direction. They all overstated the lead of a Democratic candidate over a Republican candidate. And the political scientists said, well, boy, we've studied this. We've looked at it. We just can't quite conclude why this occurred. But the fact is, the polls and all the media reports based on them consistently gave a picture of a race that wasn't really close. So, if Joe Biden is leading by 1 point in a race, you know, the responsible way to say it is it's virtually tied. But if he's leading by 6 points, you say, well, Biden has a solid lead. And that's what we saw throughout the coverage.
And what that story did not include, and what I insist be included, polling affects behavior. And when the Washington Post ABC comes out and says that Joe Biden is ahead of Donald Trump by 17 points in Wisconsin, they are impacting the election because people don't make meaningless gestures. Indeed, they find it discordant to go and vote for a known loser. It's just not done. And the study didn't show that the other shoe that has to drop. This impacted the election.
Yes, the fact is, if polls consistently show an overwhelming lead one side or the other, then the losing side gets discouraged, and they don't see any great reason to get up and go to the polls. And it does, I believe, depress some turnout. The ABC poll that you mentioned from Wisconsin is maybe the most egregious of the whole campaign, but it probably had an effect on the voting in Wisconsin. But nationally, and in all the states, if you look at this, 4 or 5 points overstated lead. Biden got this benefit, not just Wisconsin, but almost everywhere across the country.
It also impacts fundraising and volunteer turnout. It impacts whether or not you return your ballot. I just think we've got to stress. I think Biden won the election. I don't think there was fraud significant enough to overturn even one state. And they never proved it. They lost 60 times. It's not even a doubt in my mind. But this is a different issue. And I don't believe they worked hard enough to fix this because I believe the same study showed this has been going on for 20 plus years.
Right. It was the worst performance in decades, but that doesn't mean it had been good before. It was worse even than 2016. And as a journalist, I depend a lot on polls. When I go out and cover a race, I was in Pennsylvania for the last week of the 2020 presidential election. I mean, I was kind of measuring what I was seeing and hearing versus what the polls were telling me. And I sometimes kind of come up with a mix. And as a matter of fact, in Pennsylvania in 2020, I think I published an article on the 1st of November, Election Day was the 3rd, saying, yes, there is a hidden Trump vote here. There is absolutely a hidden Trump vote. And, of course, he did outperform his polls. He lost the state, but he outperformed his polls. So, you know, I think that, journalists, people like me, after this performance in 2020, on top of the 2016 performance, just have to really reconsider how we treat
And Byron, you have to reconsider the fact that Glenn Youngkin and Terry McAuliffe are allegedly tied, according to the polls. That means if past performance is indicative of present condition, Glenn Youngkin's ahead by 4 or 5 points. That's, and by the way, that's consistent with what I feel is happening, and I'm pretty objective about Virginia. I never get excited about things that aren't going well. I think Youngkin's ahead. Byron York, follow him on Twitter at Byron York. Get his daily brief by registering for it at the Washington Examiner. Come right back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Jeff Bezos is taking off shortly. But another person who took a trip this weekend is Senator Tom Cotton. I'd like to know what the weather was like in New Hampshire this past weekend, Senator Cotton.
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be on with you. The weather was beautiful, especially up in the North Country. You know, you're getting close to Canada when the road signs start having the kilometer markers in addition to the mile markers. We had a great visit to New Hampshire and campaigned with a lot of very motivated Republicans. You know, New Hampshire was the only state last year that flipped the Democratic legislature to a Republican legislature. And you can see the dividends. They passed a historic budget with historic tax cuts. A ban on gruesome late-term partial birth abortions, and also measures to prohibit the indoctrination of school children with critical race theory. So I was very excited to hear their success stories and also looking forward to more successes there next year. You know, there's going to be a very competitive Senate race where we're going to beat Maggie Hassan to help take back the Senate and pick up one, if not two, House seats to help take back the House of Representatives.
Did you have a chance to see Governor Chris Sununu and perhaps suggest to him he should run against Senator Hassan?
No, the governor was occupied during our trip this weekend, but I know he's very excited about all the success they had in their legislature as well. You know, he had worked hard last year to help flip the legislature, and that's just an example of what happens whenever you can flip control of your legislature in New Hampshire or another state, or what happens if we can flip control of the Congress next year in Washington, D.C.
Now, there are two must-watch C-SPAN series. One has gone off the air, Brian Lamb's Book Notes, although it's still there and they have great hosts and I watch it, but Brian Lamb was Brian Lamb. The other is The Road to the White House. The new edition 2024 has begun. They had cameras with you, Senator. Were they ubiquitous but quiet in the background as is Howard Mortman and gang's approach to everything?
They were with me all day Saturday to include at the Hillsborough County machine gun shoot, which was great fun. And I think they got some video of all the big guns we were able to shoot there. And as we were talking about our Second Amendment rights and how Joe Biden and the Democrats are trying to take them away and confiscate our guns. I think some of the Granite Staters were a little surprised to have cameras following us around and recording our conversation. But for the most part, C-SPAN was pretty unobtrusive.
Well, I have never actually heard of the machine gun shoot before, but you look pretty comfortable with that weapon. I'm not sure you carried that on patrol in Iraq, did you?
No. Yeah, this is the third annual machine gun shoot, and I said my only disappointment is that I didn't know about the first and the second annual machine gun shoot fundraisers for the Hillsborough County GOP. Now, you know, in the Army, we had the 240 and the 249. Every now and then, downrange, you might take a 50 cal or a Mark 19, which is essentially a grenade launcher machine gun. They didn't have any of those weapons, but they had a lot of great old-fashioned weapons or foreign weapons as well. So it was a lot of fun to shoot the big guns. As I told the crowd, you know, anytime I tried to get involved in machine gun tactics or training, when I was a platoon leader, my weapons squad leader would remind me that, hey, sir, they call you an office sir for a reason.
Well, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be allowed in the event, actually. So I'm kind of jealous. That looked like a lot of fun. Now, talk to me a little bit about business, though. If you're in New Hampshire on the weekend, you've got to be back here because Chuck Schumer is going to try and muscle down this infrastructure package tomorrow. Will he get cloture?
No, he won't. I think this is a yet another miscalculation by Chuck Schumer, showing that he's still learning his sea legs in terms of controlling the Senate floor. Not only is he not going to get votes on a bill that's not even finished yet and certainly hasn't been evaluated for its budgetary impacts, but he's irritating a lot of his own members by pushing the envelope here. I mean, look, we already spent $2 trillion in March that we didn't have, and that was really unnecessary given the state of the economy at the time. If anything, it's just fueled the massive inflation I heard so much about in New Hampshire. The price of everything from gas to food to lumber is sky high. There's plenty of time still left in the calendar to let senators move forward in a deliberate and thoughtful fashion. I think Schumer is going to fail here, and I think it's going to backfire on him as well for the rest of this agenda.
Right. We have passed the six-month mark of the President Biden administration. We did not get any look-backs because all they've done is spend $2 trillion and unleash inflation. There's nothing else that's been done. And the Delta variant has put the lie to COVID being under control, Senator.
Yeah, it's shocking how you don't get those six-month retrospectives on the Biden term the way you would under a Republican president when, as you say, the only accomplishment is just blowing through $2 trillion that we didn't have and whose main effect has been to unleash inflation to levels we haven't seen in 40 years, which is the hidden tax on the middle class, making their dollar go less and less far every single day. And let's not forget about foreign policy either. I mean, Uncle Sam has a kicking sign on his back right now, thanks to Joe Biden and his team's continually apologizing and groveling and doing things like inviting the United Nations Human Rights Council, which has such human rights champions as Cuba and Venezuela and North Korea on it, to come to America to study American racism.
Now, Senator, I have a column coming out in The Washington Post today, which I had to fact check with the editors yesterday, which is good. I don't mind fact checking. I make the assertion that the first person to the bell was you. You're the first elected official who warned about COVID in January of last year. And inside the administration, there's O'Brien Pottinger and Secretary Pompeo. But you were the first elected person, and they wanted me to fact check that, which I did, and I proved it to them. So now we are a year and a half into public awareness of it, and the Delta variant is here. And I'm going to argue in this column that the military should be vaccinating its soldiers. I don't know where you stand on that. But I don't believe the Biden administration has delivered a coherent plan to credential anyone to speak authoritatively. And I still think our public health agencies are crippled by nobody intended to lose their credibility, but all the credibility is gone. Do you agree with me on that?
Well, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris undermined their own credibility, Hugh, by continuing to say last year that they weren't sure they'd take the vaccine because it was developed under Donald Trump. And some of these public health bureaucrats like Tony Fauci have destroyed their credibility over the last year and a half by deliberately and continuously misleading the American people about whether masks were appropriate or what levels would achieve herd immunity, or in Dr. Fauci's case now, misleading the fact that his agency funded dangerous gain-of-function research in the Wuhan labs until recently. In the end, Hugh, I mean, my conversations with people across Arkansas this past weekend in New Hampshire suggests to me that there is no one person who can go out and tell people who haven't taken the vaccine yet to take the vaccine. It's not going to be a politician, Democrat or Republican. It's not going to be an athlete. It's not going to be a celebrity. It's trusted advisors in one's own life, primarily one's own doctor, but also family and friends who've had experience both with the vaccine and with the virus. So rather than threatening to have Facebook censor what they call misinformation, which I would note included the likelihood that the virus started in a lab until just a few weeks ago, or rather than sending Democratic operatives door to door to knock on people's doors who haven't gotten the vaccine, raising the question of how they would know that, I think Joe Biden and his administration should just be encouraging Americans, as I have for many weeks, to talk to your doctor, get the facts, make the decision on an informed basis with your doctor and with your family and friends who can tell you about their experiences.
No, Senator, I agree with all that, 100%. I do believe, however, that we have a false sense of virus security spreading in the country, because I think we are actually closer to another pandemic than we were at this time in 19, because of the fact we've got 100 million cases of a new virus out there, each of them mutating. And I'm afraid that we don't have anyone that is credible in the eyes of the public in the way that the CDC was at the beginning of this, that it is not now, and that we need new leadership that is actually credible in the eyes of everyone. And I just keep seeing, and God bless Tony Fauci and Francis Collins. They did the best they could. They weren't very good at communicating. But we can't go into another health crisis without anybody on the bench. It would be a disaster.
So, and the way to maintain, or the way to build back credibility, Hugh, is to be honest with the American people. Let me just give you one example of where I think Tony Fauci made a bad misstep. Early on, he didn't just say masks aren't useful. He kind of mocked and ridiculed people who thought they were useful. And then he flipped on a dime a few weeks later. And he later said that, oh, we need to protect our masks for nurses and doctors. Well, he should have just said from the beginning, you know, masks may help and it may be wise for us all to start wearing masks. But at the moment, we have a shortage. Please don't rush out and hoard masks while our nurses and doctors who are dealing with this virus need it. I think virtually every American would have heard that and would have followed that guidance, because we all understood that our hospitals were under tremendous strain. Dr. Fauci has also said repeatedly over the last year that herd immunity is going to be at 70%. Oh, it's going to be 75. It's going to be 80. It's going to be 85. Just say what it is. And he claimed that he was changing the number because he was judging what the American people could process. Like, he has no idea what the American people could process. He's a bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. It's like a judge thinking they can make economic policy sitting in their chambers. You should just level with the American people, be honest, and trust them to make the right decision.
100% agree, and we have to start over with people who understand that from the beginning. Senator Tom Cotton, thank you for joining me. I'm glad that the machine guns worked in New Hampshire and that the weather was nice up there. Glad to have you back in D.C. Go nowhere, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, 33 minutes after the hour, joined by Senator Marsha Blackburn of the great state of Tennessee. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you.
Senator, you're on the Commerce, Science, Transportation Committee, Veterans Affairs, and Armed Services, so you're a good person to ask. In the Washington Post later today, I will be arguing that the military ought to require, unless there is a medical reason or a religious objection, every member of the uniformed services to get vaccinated because the Delta variant is simply moving too fast. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I think that anything doing with vaccine needs to be a discussion between an individual and their physician. And I've been vaccinated. I believe in vaccines. I think some of this anti-vax rhetoric is not helpful. But to mandate that people get a vaccine, in my opinion, that's a little bit of an overstep. We do know there are individuals that have certain medical conditions that have caused adverse reactions. Some of those reactions very serious, with cardiovascular systems, with neuromuscular systems. So my advice would be talk to your doctor.
But again, this is about the military, and I'm concerned about national security and preparedness. And it seems to me we insist that absent a good medical excuse, as you just said, or a referral or a religious objection, we oblige members of the military to get vaccinated for any number of things. They just stand in line and get the shots before they deploy. And I know that from members of my family. I don't know why we're not insisting that our force be ready at any time. And so I just think it ought to be brought up at the committee level and discussed and debated. Has it yet appeared before the committee as a matter of subject conversation?
It has not, but we are currently working on the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act. And that is the 2022 spending bills and priorities. It is the combination of the placement request for authorization to spend and the legislative changes.
Okay, so I hope that does come up. Now, let me ask you about the infrastructure bill. Yeah. Senator Schumer's going to push it to the floor tomorrow. Senator Cotton just said last segment, no way it has cloture votes. Do you agree with him?
I agree with him. There is no way people are going to go to the floor and vote for the motion to proceed when we do not know what we're proceeding to. I mean, this is ludicrous. And the fact that Chuck Schumer thinks that he can get the votes to proceed on the measure, look, this is political stunts. Schumer knows he doesn't have the votes. They didn't want to pass this thing anyway. They were going to spend $1.2 trillion on infrastructure and then turn around and spend $3.5 trillion in their human infrastructure bill, when what they really want to do is spend $6 trillion. So they're going to put this bill on the floor. Say Republicans voted against infrastructure, and because they did that, we're going to up our price tag and spend what we wanted to spend anyway.
Well, that is, to me, obvious, but it nevertheless isn't obvious to members of the media. So you're a not now, not ever, never vote on this infrastructure package?
I am for an infrastructure bill that deals with roads and bridges and rivers and runways and railways. That is what I'm for. I'm for adding to broadband. But to start to call increased membership in unions, infrastructure, to make changes and expansions in Medicare and call that infrastructure, that is completely inappropriate, and it is disrespectful of the hardworking taxpayers and the citizens we represent.
Let me also ask you about the $3.5 trillion to $4 trillion reconciliation bill. I don't believe they are at 50 votes in the Senate so that Vice President Harris could cast a tiebreaker. I don't even think they're at 48, because it seems to me Raphael Warnock, Maggie Hassan, and Mark Kelly should put in their retirement papers if they vote for that, given the inflationary period we are in. What do you think?
I think that their provisions are a tax and spend Lollapalooza, and they know they're going to lose the House and Senate in 2022. They want to get as much done as they possibly can do before that period. And so they're going to push forward with this. They feel like this is their best shot at putting in place some of these socialistic programs that they're moving forward to. And they look at the tax and spend bill really as what I call their lie, cheat, and steal type approach, because they're not going to tell you what they're really doing with the money. They are going to move money around. They're going to cheat on different departments, and then they're going to steal from future generations to pay for this thing.
Do any of your colleagues across the aisle talk to you about inflation? Inflation is actually a tax. People don't think of it that way. It's a 5.5% tax on everything last month. And they don't understand it. I don't understand what Democrats are doing. Lawrence Summers, the Secretary of the Treasury under Bill Clinton, has warned about it. What in the world are they doing?
They're just trying to spend us into bankruptcy is what they are doing. And you know, Hugh, I think it's always instructive to go back and look at how our nation has accrued debt through the time of our nation's history. From George Washington to George W. Bush, we had accrued $10.6 trillion in debt. Too much for me, but by today's standards, it seems a little bit more something that you can get your thoughts around. But then during the Obama-Biden administration, they nearly doubled that debt. And then President Trump added to it through COVID. And now Joe Biden is pushing us to $30 trillion in debt. And he's only 180 days in to his administration. So you have to say, what in the world are they thinking?
Now, Senator, I want to switch to Tennessee for a moment. I got a lot of affiliates in Tennessee. I also have a friend, Virginia, who is moving with her curmudgeonly husband, John, to Knoxville, Tennessee. They're originally from Indiana, then they're in California. Now they're moving to Knoxville. And she's wonderful, but he's going to be the guy at every city council meeting who stands up and complains about the sewer assessment. I just know the guy. But that he's like they're one of millions that are moving to Tennessee. What is happening in your state as people like Virginia and John move in?
What is happening is Tennessee is one of the best states in the country for doing business. It is also one of the lowest tax states in the country. We have no state income tax, and we will never have a state income tax in Tennessee. So people are choosing to move and get out of these high tax, high crime, high regulatory states and move to states that are a little bit more individual and business friendly. So that is what we are seeing. Many people are moving in. We just say, remember why you left where you have been living, and don't bring those blue state politics with you.
Well, that's what happened to Colorado. Unfortunately, they got the first wave of Californians fleeing California. I don't know that there's enough wacky leftists to move to Tennessee, but have you got any kind of early indication of the politics of Tennessee changing because of the inward immigration?
We have not seen any changes. As a matter of fact, a couple of weekends ago, I'd stepped into a restaurant with my family to grab dinner and met three couples that had recently relocated from California. And they were so excited to be there. And I said, now, why did you leave? High taxes, the number one reason. Bad business climate, the number two reason. Lack of control over immigration, the number three reason. So people are choosing, especially now that they can do more of their work remotely, they are choosing to relocate. And you have in Tennessee a big technology sector and a lot of healthcare technology. You have the entertainment industry. And some of these individuals were going to keep an apartment in California so that they would kind of do a back and forth, but they wanted their families out of a state where the teachers' unions are making decisions on how to teach the children, not the parents and the teachers making decisions.
Is CRT an issue in Tennessee?
Our governor and our General Assembly work together on legislation that you cannot teach it in Tennessee.
I am glad to hear that. Senator Marsha Blackburn, always a pleasure. I hope the Armed Services Committee takes up vaccination in the military. I'll be writing about it later in the Washington Post. Always good to talk to you, Senator. Have a good one. I'll be right back, America. Let me remind you, though, relieffactor.com. This will not help you with the virus. Won't help you with the Delta, the Epsilon, or the Omega variant. There is no Epsilon and Omega variant yet, but they're coming. It will help you with minor aches and pains that come from exercise and aging. And right after the show, I'm out there on the highways and byways of the Beltway, getting my miles in because that's what I do after the show, work off the excess stress. And I want to ask all of you, please give it a try. ReliefFactor.com is great if you're exercising every day. You ought to be. Just start today with 100 yards, maybe double it the next day and double it the next week. Don't do anything crazy today. Don't go run 5 miles. But do get started. And for those minor aches and pains, use relieffactor.com.